CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the producers and or the persons appearing on the program and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of CIUT-FM.
And I'll remind you, it is the Taylor Report and it is CIUT. And I've been mentioning, and I'm going to continue to mention, I hope that Diana Johnson has this great book, Circle in the Darkness, Memoir of a World Watcher. And, of course, the Taylor Report is part of the World Watching Caucus. And one of the things we notice is that she refers to in her book that she learned is that the great media conglomerates are masters at framing stories. And, as a matter of fact, it was the complaint of her husband, a journalist, I think he was Associated Press, one of the major outfits, and that he would make a report on a country or event and notice that the head office had reframed his story so as to actually enforce sort of the company line on a view of an individual or of a country. And this comes to mind because we were having events in the Great Lakes region of Africa that are very instructive of the policies followed by media of framing stories. I could say at the top that I think Victoire Ingabire, who leads a very important political movement called the Development and Liberty for All, DELFA. By the way, she's had to change the name of the organization to please the authorities in Rwanda. Victoire Ingabire should be the president of Rwanda. It looked at from the claims of Washington, Ottawa, Paris, London, Brussels, because she lives up to the anybody's sensible understanding of the word Democrat and someone who believes in due process, somebody who believes in that, not in suppressing another party, but being free to advocate and represent a party and to stand for office, which is, according to Chrystia Freeland and Pompeo and even Trump, this is really the test of democracy. And when they talk, Western media talk about events in Hong Kong, they have a term, and they also use it in Ukraine, they use it wherever the U.S. Is trying to exercise hegemony, influence, get its way. They say pro-democracy. Well, Victoire Ingabire is very much pro-democracy. She put in 8 years in prison for having had the temerity to stand for election in Rwanda. And she had not accused anybody of anything. She had said that she wanted a system in which everyone was represented, as of course captured in the name of her party, Development and Liberty for All. By the way, those are big chores, Development and Liberty for All. That's hard to achieve that, but that's a great, ambitious, and laudable goal. And it's coming from Victoire Ingabire. She's never called pro-democracy when the media here write about her, if they do mention. They tend to mention her legal problems, but they do not label her properly as someone who is a champion of actual democratic values, of the kind, their values, the ones they state repeatedly. So I bring up this matter of Victoire because, of course, she is in a, I would say, in a kind of form of house arrest. She was released from prison, but there were certain undertakings, and it certainly involved her not being moving around much because it's very hazardous. I hope the listeners of the Taylor Report and CIA 2 will recall all the years that we've been talking about the matter of Rwanda, how many lives have been lost by people, school teachers, preachers, students, ordinary Rwandans who admired Victoire Ingabire's program and her courage and who have identified with her and who have died. They disappear. Some of them, their bodies haven't been found. Many of her followers and associates have been in prison. There's been an episode in the past week where an individual and family who were associated with or had some sympathy for Victoire Ingabire found their premises under assault, and an individual died. I'm deliberately not being precise because it is very hard to get anything resembling precise information from Rwanda. I looked at a BBC report, and you begin scratching your head at the beginning of the report and scratching your head at the end of the report. They do say that they tried to reach authorities there, but it's clear that those individuals associated with or sympathetic towards Victoire Ingabire were the ones treated as though they were somehow, even though they were the ones attacked, they were treated as the ones who were the bad people, because we live in a black hat, white hat world, particularly when mainstream reporting, that's the only thing they know how to do, is immediately decide who the villain is. However, this is all to say that this is an individual, leads a very good party, which would broaden the political environment of Rwanda against a system which has had one man rule, a general named Kagame, since 1994. And the question is, why are people in the West so comfortable with that? And I'm pointing out this situation at a time when in Burundi, the Burundians, I could say, I guess, are cousins of the Rwandans. At one time, under Belgian rule, it was one administrative quarter of a colonial empire. I started to say the Belgians weren't really good at it. They certainly were brutal. But at any rate, the demographics of Burundi are like those of Rwanda. If you're speaking of ethnic groups, the minority Twa, the smallest group, then you have the Tutsi, who will make up about 7 to 10%, if that, and then people called the Hutu. Again, these are imprecise terms, and there's all kinds of terrible things that happen when these words are used. Knives come out. In the case of Victoire Ingabire, to go back to that, if someone was on the radio or television in Rwanda shortly after the incident where one of her supporters was harmed, or family, and actually the voice, the individual called for the assassination of Victoire Ingabire. Nothing was said from Ottawa. Nothing was said from the Canadian Embassy. Nothing was said from Washington, D.C. These things, that's considered okay. That's considered normal. Now, I was mentioning Burundi. Burundi has just had an election. Not their first, by the way. Under a government that's been led by Mr. Nkurunziza, former guerrilla fighter who led the largely Hutu forces in a struggle to regain the power that they had lost when their leader was assassinated in 1993. Their second leader, by the way, was killed in the plane with President Habyarimana of Rwanda in 1994. They had to go to into the jungle and had to resist and fight to regain majority rule in the society and to establish a stable government, which is stable. And it has opposition parties. Nkurunziza is stepping down, has already stepped down. There is a new president, and I'm glad to say. His name is Evariste Ndayishimiye. And I noticed something about the coverage. This is what I'm talking about, framing stories. So here's how they frame it. First of all, Reuters and Associated Press say contested. There was election violence. Some human rights organization wonders if it might have been rigged, and they report that there's somebody who's unhappy. And so that's the way the story is framed. It has been an election. President, I'm going to have trouble remembering his name, President Nkurunziza has stepped down. And so, and by the way, he was a popular leader. There's no question he was popular. I know the United States didn't think he was popular. What they meant was they didn't like him. But it's clear that he had a popular support. But he had, by the way, there was opposition. That's my point. There was an opposition. There's been an opposition in Burundi, right through, actually, political parties and movements, and they speak up. And the debates are vigorous, and there are many points of view, there's no question. And so, but when the Western media wants to talk about Burundi, where the president has stepped down and a new president is taking office, they have to go to work on framing. So the frame in the one of the stories I'm seeing is that they mention, they call him Burundi President General Evariste Ndayishimiye. And so you say, well, why did you say he was a general? He's president of Burundi. But you wanted to put general in there, see, because you want to get at that. And of course, then you always, and then they want to say, well, it was opponents say it was rigged. Well, I'll tell you something. Nobody talks about rigging elections in Rwanda because there aren't any. When Kagame runs, anybody who's thinking about running against him runs for their life. And Canada thinks that's just hunky-dory. And Washington thinks it's okay. London thinks it's fine. Paris thinks it's fine. They have it. And by the way, President Kagame, they don't refer to him as general. He is a general. He was a general who led the Rwanda Patriotic Front, as it's called. He was also general in the Ugandan army. And according to Philip Renchens, who's supposed to know about this stuff, Philip Renchens, when he testified in a court in Tanzania about the events of 1994, he said, he was asked, is there any evidence that he's not still a general in the Ugandan army? And he said, no, there's no record of ever having resigned, or there's no indication of it. Certain Ugandan army doesn't complain and say, hey, you were our director of intelligence, head of intelligence in Uganda under Museveni. So this is how we frame stories. Where they have an election and where they have legal opposition, and it's done publicly, and everybody hears and everybody sees, and it's argued, and the people turn out and the people vote, and the president, these kind of people, they like to call a man like Nkurunziza a strong man. He steps down. He stepped down. So all that happened. But we don't. When he's not being, Burundi is not being applauded by the West. They're not saying, what a wonderful development. There's something that might serve as an example for Rwanda, where you have Victoire Ingabire, a Democrat, person who believes in a constitutional order and opposition parties and peaceful transition, etc. They instead, in her system, they have a strongman, and U.S. likes that strongman. As a matter of fact, when Obama was in office, he had a Secretary of State, I think it was. Maybe not. I forget what Samantha Power's job was. Oh, she was an ambassador to the United Nations, and she had some other job. She spent a lot of time trying to overthrow the government of Burundi. A lot of time. That would be the country where they have opposition parties, and where they had elections, and where the president stepped down. That was Samantha Powers. That was President Obama. She didn't have a problem with the strongman, the general who runs Rwanda. She thought he was fine and dandy, and couldn't say enough nice things about him, and still can't. So in other words, here's what it is. We're framing a story, basically. So if you talk about Burundi and your Associated Press and Reuters, you have to say contested election, opposition said it was rigged, reports of violence. That's what you say. And then you say Rwanda, where Victoire Ingabire spent 8 years in prison because she wanted to run for office, and now has people publicly saying on public programs that she ought to be assassinated. When you come to them, you say, well, trying to heal a country, trying to bring about reconciliation, and suggesting that the permanent rule of the president is necessary. I know they quibble, but in fact, Kagame hasn't lost his mojo with the British and the French and the Americans, because they haven't decided on anybody to replace him, so that they stick with him. And by the way, when they do, he'll find out the hard way. The issue here is, going back to Diana Johnson's proposition, in the great book, Circle in the Darkness, Memoir of a World Watcher, the great monopolies, news monopolies, who land on us every day, frame their stories. So she doesn't get to be called pro-democracy. The only people get to be called pro-democracy are people working to overthrow governments that the U.S. doesn't like. And any such person is a hero and a martyr and a wonderful person, and definitely pro-democracy. No matter what comes out of their mouth, they are pro-democracy, because AP, Reuters, New York Times, Washington Post, they've already decided. So it's that kind of game. I really hope that our listeners, people, will get behind this question of supporting people who are pro-democracy, like Victoire. If for the simplest reason that when there is no attention paid to the efforts of someone as brave and intelligent and qualified, by the way. Victoire Ingabire Umuhoza she's really very well trained, intellectually outstanding individual. I was thinking about that today when I was reading about General Kurunziza and that's from his guerrilla days, and the new president of Burundi. They're highly educated people, and they're not just military. Both of them, in the case of Burundi, these were men who were part of a guerrilla campaign because their president had been murdered and they were fighting and eventually succeeded. But they were not military by career. They were actually both in academia, although in the case of Kurunziza, he was in athletics, and is apparently quite a soccer player. But his successor is also a university individual. And like Victoire. Yes, they were offering their skills, their knowledge to their people who badly need this. They don't really, it's not a crying need for somebody who's been a fighter, army leader, professional army leader all his life. That tends not to be the best career path, not to, in terms of how to develop a country and lead it. But let's underline that. That look for the frame of the story. And Samantha Powers and Obama tried to frame democratic Burundi, but they failed. They tried to overthrow it, and they failed, and their people went ahead and had their elections, and now the president has stepped down. And we would like to see, urge, respect for the program and leadership of Victoire Ingabire, and try to bring a democratic order with political opposition, and to try for liberty and progress in the country of Rwanda, which is currently not available.